The Manscaped Performance Package 5.0 Ultra has everything you need to prepare that summer bod. Every man knows how scary it can get when going for a close shave below the belt. That's why I trust Manscaped for all my sensitive areas. Inside this package, you'll find the star of the show, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. Their fifth generation trimmers features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. We also have dual LED spotlights to provide contrast on multiple skin tones, three length setting combs, and oh, did I mention this trimmer is waterproof too? Beach, lake, shower, this razor will devour even the strongest pubes. Now that you have the perfect haircut, use Manscaped's liquid formulations to keep that freshness even at the hottest summer barbecues. The Crop Soother, aftershave lotion and crop preserver, anti-chafe ball deodorant. Once they touch your sack, you'll never go back. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 5.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. More wet products? Say no more. Manscaped's new Buff Bundle is all you need to keep the summer heat a breeze. The bundle includes their signature silicone scrubber and body wash. Ditch your nasty loofah and grab a taste of freshness.
All aboard!
Let's do that hockey.
Welcome to Double Prospects Report, a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This is report number 76. I'm Victor Nuno, one of the co-hosts here. And with me today is not Peter Harling, flying solo, but I have an elite guest to cover for Missing Pete. And that is Scott Wheeler of The Athletic. Scott and I are going to discuss some of the standouts from the Buffalo Prospect Challenge, which is a really fun tournament involving Boston, Pittsburgh, New Jersey, Ottawa, Columbus, and Buffalo prospects. Should be a whole lot of fun, and I'm sure he'll give us his updated takes on these prospects who stood out to him. Want to remind you that this episode is brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and DraftKings. Follow at HockeyPodNet for more great hockey podcasts. You can use the DraftKings promo code THPN for listening to the show. More on that in a bit. We're also proudly sponsored by Fantrax, the ultimate league manager for any dynasty sport you play. It's completely customizable for however you want to set up your league, from scoring categories, an amazing draft room to host a draft pick trading, treasury option, and so much more. Use the promo code to sign up for a free league using the link fantrax.com/DPR show. Pleased to be joined by Scott Wheeler of The Athletic, one of the best prospect writers out there. So pleased to have you. Scott, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Just getting back into the swing of the season here. We had rookie tournament a couple of weeks ago. I'm off tonight to see Barrie and Brampton play, to see three, in my opinion, three of the top sort of 30 or 40 prospects in the upcoming NHL draft. So looking forward to sort of getting back on the grind here in the fall.
Yeah, it's starting in earnest. That's fun to hear. And yeah, as you alluded to, the prospect challenge was a couple weeks ago. We wanted to pick your brain about that. Before we did that, I was just wondering, you know, this tournament has six teams in it. Don't you think it would be awesome if they had a tournament that had half the league or something like that? Do you think that'll ever happen? Has that been discussed?
The only challenge with that is facilities. The NBA obviously pulls it off with the NBA Summer League. I think we all agree that it would be great for the NHL to try to replicate Summer League in some way, especially if they're moving towards a decentralized NHL draft. And we're no longer going to have that sort of one destination where everybody in the hockey world gets together all at the same time. That's what NBA Summer League represents for basketball, right? Where all of the teams are in one place and all of their personnel are there and all of it. So, but the challenge with that is in Summer League, for example, you can throw a bunch of, like they do it in conference centers and gyms, and they throw, you can throw an NBA court together in any open space, basically indoors. In the NHL, if you're dealing with 30 teams or even half of it, if you're dealing with 15 teams, for example, 16 teams, it's all about the ice, the quality of the ice, timing, and it's just hard. There's not a lot of facilities that have 8-9 pads on planet Earth, really. So that's the challenge that they face, is there are all sorts of facilities that have four or five pads, but even four or five pads isn't enough to accommodate the number of games that we're talking about if we're doing a bigger tournament. So I think you'll probably see eight teams be the maximum. I could see Buffalo's growing to eight. There were seven teams in California this year for the tournament there. All of the California teams, Seattle, Colorado, Vegas, they were all sort of Utah, obviously, they were all sort of under one roof. There was a time when there were eight teams participating in the Traverse City Prospect Tournament, which is now down to two. But I don't think you can pull it off with, I don't think there are facilities that can pull it off with many more than eight teams, for example.
Yeah, that would be so cool. You point out a good point. I'm out here near San Jose. They do have seven sheets, so yeah, just not quite enough to do more than that. We can
There's
dream though.
seven sheets in one facility is pretty close. That would you could maybe pull it off in that kind of a setting.
Yeah, it'd be fun to see. Well, thanks for giving me your thoughts on that. I asked you for some players who stood out and you delivered. So we're going to talk about some of those. The first one, I actually hadn't heard about this player too much, and I actually had to figure out who his first name was because you just gave me the last name. Xavier Parent is the guy, 5'8", 170 pounds. He's 23 years old, and he played last season for the Utica Comets, had 45 points in 71 games. He was never drafted. I think we know why. The size probably is a big part of it. But what did you see from Perron, and did he do enough to earn a contract?
Well, the rookie tournaments are interesting because you always get a good mix of 22, 23, sometimes even 24-year-old players who have played in the AHL or ECHL for a couple of years and are trying to go from AHL deals to NHL deals. And typically, those players can stand out in this setting. There are success stories, players like that, who've earned NHL contracts through strong rookie tournaments. And then you've also got the first-round picks who are 18, 19 years old who also typically stand out. So Perrant was kind of the top player in this year's tournament in Buffalo from that first group. He was all over it. He looked like a player who'd had 40 plus points in the AHL last year. He looked like a 23-year-old. He was all around it offensively. He was creating one-on-one off the rush. He was creating one-on-one inside the zone. He was getting to the net. He looked good on the power play. You sort of go down the list of things you're expecting to see from a player like that at that level, and he checked all the boxes. And that, combined with the 100-point season he had in the Q, combined with the really strong season he had in the AHL last year, and even if he is on the smaller side, he's a player that kind of caught my eye, and I started to wonder, okay, is this the kind of kid who deserves an NHL deal? And a couple of players kind of came to mind along the same mold. Alex Barré-Boulette kind of traveled a similar path out of the Q. Xavier Simoneau earned an NHL contract through his play in the AHL and in the Q with the Montreal Canadiens, obviously, and I now think that Simoneau is at some point going to make his NHL debut for the Canadiens if they run into some injury troubles here this year, for example. So there are paths for those smaller, talented Q guys who maybe go undrafted to sort of put it together. And Perron sort of stood out that way for me.
That's exciting. Well, hopefully he can follow that pathway and make a team. The next guy is certainly the latter camp, I would imagine. Harrison Brunecki. He was drafted 2024, second round by the Pittsburgh Penguins, 6'3", 196-pound right-handed D. Played for Kamloops last year in the WHL, should play again there this year. Was half point per game. And what did you like from his game? I've heard a lot of raving reviews from different people about him, but I wasn't there to see it.
Yeah, Brunecki was excellent at the tournament. It can be hard as an 18-year-old, especially when you're not sort of a top 10 pick level talent. It can be hard as an 18-year-old to stand out in these rookie tournaments. It's your first introduction to pro hockey. In many cases, I think a lot of those kids dumb down their games and don't stand out as a result because they're trying to show coaches that they can be trusted and that they can simplify and all of that, and they're just not themselves. Brunecki wasn't that. After a really strong U18 Worlds for Canada, where he emerged as an important defensive player for Team Canada in Finland en route to a gold medal, he just continued to build on that, not just at rookie tournament, but in the preseason so far. He had a tremendous game playing with Pettersson, who's obviously an established NHL defenseman. I guess him and Marcus played together, I guess it was 2 or 3 nights ago as we're recording this. And that was against NHL players in a competitive environment in an NHL preseason, let alone in a rookie tournament. But in the rookie tournament, I thought he looked like a better prospect than Owen Pickering, who's obviously a first-round D prospect for the Penguins. And really, outside of Rutger McGroarty, I thought he looked like the second-best prospect within the Penguins organization. And they've obviously gone out and not just acquired McGroarty and others, and Lucius, and now Lucius is a college player, so he wasn't participating in the rookie tournament, but even Ville Koivunen, who was a close to a point per game player in Liga last year, like Brunecki really, really stood out for that Penguins team. And they're going to need some guys. Obviously, their pool over the last 5 to 10 years has been consistently one of the weakest in the NHL. They're now trying slowly to build it back up. I think recognizing that they can't continue to push all in around Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, and that they're not good enough to truly contend anymore. And that recalibration has landed them some decent prospects, and Brunecki looks like one. And Brunecki's been so impressive through the rookie tournament and his preseason play with the Penguins that I think there's actually now an outside chance that he gets invited to selection camp for Team Canada for the World Juniors as an 18-year-old, when he wasn't initially invited to their summer World Junior summer showcase camp. So yeah, really, really positive for Brunecki. The big thing that stands out about Harrison's game is his skating. He's extremely mobile. He's a high-end skater, great athlete. He's got length. And anytime you've got length and you can really, really skate, there's an interesting package there to work with as a defenseman. But I think what has impressed people has been his confidence on the puck and his poise and his willingness to make plays. He hasn't dumbed down his game. And I expect him to go back to Kamloops to wear a letter for that Blazers team. I know they're going to put a letter on his jersey just in speaking with some of the staff there. And then after that, I expect him to be potentially a point per game defenseman in the WHL this season, and a real top player at that level based on how he's looked over the last couple of months here.
That's fantastic. Big riser. I'm wondering, based on all the things you said and how confident he looks, do you think, like, in fantasy, is he going to be someone who should run a power play? Is he going to be someone who actually puts up that many points in the NHL? Clearly, he's going to have a strong WHL season. That seems likely, but will that translate, do you think?
I think he's more likely a PP2 guy, if anything, in the NHL. Like, we're not talking about a true power play one dynamic offensive defenseman. He can shoot the puck. He scored 10 plus goals in the WHL last year. That's been an asset of his. He plays a confident, aggressive style. He will swing below the goal line or go to the front of the net or jump in and join the rush with his skating. But he's never been a super, super dynamic, cerebral, like, going to be a 40 or 50 point defenseman in the NHL type of player. I think that would be a pretty surprising outcome for him. But if he becomes a two-way second pairing 30 point guy in the NHL, I think that's within reach for him.
Awesome. You mentioned McGroarty, so we might as well just go there, since as you mentioned, the Pittsburgh pool is a little weak, but these two are certainly some bright spots. And McGroarty, 2022 14th overall pick by the Winnipeg Jets. He didn't want to play for them, forced his way out a little bit. Now he's in Pittsburgh, 6'1", 205 pounds. He looks like he's in line for a role with the Penguins. He had an awesome career at Michigan. He was incredible for Team USA at the U20 World Junior Championship, captained them to a gold medal after having that injury and being questionable to even play. So that was nice to see. I'm wondering what you saw from him. I imagine he should have been one of the more NHL-ready guys and one of the better players in that tournament. So what did you think from him there? And what do you think we can expect from him in the Penguins? Top six with Sidney or Malkin? What do we think?
Well, I'll start with rookie tournament. He was good. I don't think he was the best player in the tournament, but he was very good. He had a point in all, I believe he had a point in all three games and 2 points in two of the three games. So I think he finished with like 5 points in three games. Did most of his damage on the power play, but I thought he had some nice moments at even strength. He was playing with some more jump. The big question about Rutger has always been whether he has the pace to match the rest of his game. He's a strong kid. Good, sort of good athlete overall, legit skill, can shoot the puck, smart player, good playmaking sense, all of that. That's what's carried him. That's what's made him a top player in his age group with USA Hockey all the way up. But the pace was always the question. He did play with good pace at the rookie tournament. My understanding is that he's been less impressive in preseason. I think they were aiming to give him if he played well in preseason and sort of stood out in preseason. I do think he was going to be a top six winger to start the year with them. I think that's part of the sales pitch and that they made to him and his representatives and going out and acquiring him and getting him comfortable with the move from Winnipeg to Pittsburgh was to say, look, we've got top nine NHL jobs open for you. Now, my understanding is there's been a little bit of chatter about him maybe starting in the AHL. But whether he starts in the AHL or he starts in the NHL, even if he does start in the NHL, I think he's more likely to start in a middle six role now than a top six one. I could see him as a third line winger to start the season. Now, will he play at some point this season with Sidney Crosby or Evgeny Malkin? I think the expectation is yes. And I think his camp was told that he'll get that opportunity at some point. But he's still going to have to earn those looks and he's still going to have to play well. And the big question is going to be the skating and whether he has enough jump, enough giddy up to keep up at the NHL level relative to the rest of his game. I believe he does. I think he's ready to play and be a good piece for them. He may not be an impact piece for them, but I think he's going to be a good top nine player before the season's done for that team.
Yeah, that's exciting. And you certainly think all those discussions were on the table when the trade was made. So hopefully he can realize that potential. Let's move over to one of the other interesting players, Seamus Casey, 2022 second round pick by the Devils, 5'10", 181 pound right-handed D. He was awesome at Michigan. Also was really great for Team USA at the World Juniors. Every time I watch him in those tournaments and in college, he always looked great. But the thing that always sticks in the back of my head is, can this 5'10 defenseman defend well enough against pros? I don't think we know that yet, and hopefully we'll find out this season when he's in the AHL. But what did you see from him in this tournament, and do you have those types of concerns too?
Well, Seamus looked like he looked like a stud. I think he always looks like a stud. The game sort of comes so easily and naturally to him. He's a high-end skater. He's got great puck skill and finesse. He's a natural on the power play. He's just a fun, fun player to watch. His challenge in New Jersey is going to be that Anton Seliev is in front of him, and Luke Hughes is in front of him, and Simon Nemec is in front of him. And of their young high-end D, they really have four of them, but he's really the fourth one. Now, in saying that, he was a standout in front of Sheldon Keefe, who was in Buffalo for the rookie tournament, and he has continued to play extremely well. And there's even been a little bit of chatter about maybe giving him a look in the NHL with the Devils this year, rather than sending him directly to the AHL, because he's played well enough to warrant that. So I think the talent ultimately wins out with Seamus. I think he defends really well with his feet, frankly. I think he's competitive enough. Is he going to be a high-end stopper in the NHL? No. But I think he's going to be an effective 5-on-5 defenseman who can run a power play for you. And if it's Luke Hughes running PP1 and either Simon Nemec or Seamus Casey running PP2 in the future with the Devils, or maybe even a 2D unit with the Devils at some point in the future, I think you're in a good spot. And maybe Seamus also just becomes an asset to go play somewhere out to be dealt somewhere else and turned into something else for the Devils, because he's a legit NHL prospect and a high end player. He's been a high end player at every level he's ever played at. I'm a big, big fan of Seamus and his game, and I expect him to become an NHLer, even if there is a bit of a crowd in front of him in New Jersey.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a good point. That was going to be my next question, is do you think maybe he just ends up being a trade asset for someone else, because the crowd in front of him, it's going to be hard, but there are plenty of teams where he could maybe be top power play, and, you know, could he be like a top line guy, or is he more like a second pairing top power play in the right situation? Does he have that upside if he gets moved?
I think at 5-on-5, he's probably a 3 to 5 D, a three in sort of your best case outcome, and more likely a 4 or 5. But I do think, could he be a PP1 defenseman with the right organization? Absolutely. And could he put up 40 points in the NHL someday? Absolutely. I don't think those things are out of the question for Seamus at all.
Awesome. And then I know there are a bunch of Buffalo players to talk about. One we specifically wanted to mention is Jiří Kulik. He was 28th overall back in 2022 by the Sabres, 6'1", 185 pounds. He had another great AHL season last year. In fact, Kulik has a pretty cool distinction. He's fourth all time in teenage AHL scoring, which is a pretty fun feat. Not a lot of the top prospects end up going to the AHL as teenagers because of the CHL NHL agreement, so it's a smaller pool, but that's still pretty cool. He's ahead of Kevin Fiala and a couple other guys. What did you see from Kulik in this tournament, and what do you think his NHL projection looks like now?
Kulik was he was the standout of the tournament for me, maybe. Now, he was playing on a Sabres roster that on paper was clearly leaps and bounds ahead of the others in terms of talent level. So I think there was an opportunity for all of the Sabres to stand out in their own way just because of the skill level of that young group. But Kulik looked like a veteran out there, even though he's still 20 years old, right? Like I think because of the AHL time, we can often trick ourselves into thinking that he's older than he actually is. He's still a very young player in terms of prospect years. The one-timer is his biggest weapon. He has one of the best one-timers outside the NHL. It is a elite quality in his game. It's automatic on the power play. He has to play on an NHL power play and probably even PP1 in the NHL, I think, just because of the one-timer and the threat that it represents. But the big thing with Jiří over the last couple of years is that it's not just the shot that stands out anymore. He is really well built. He's a very strong, you shake his hand in real life, like he's a muscular kid. He can stand and hold pucks. He's got tons of puck skill. There's decent playmaking elements. And now suddenly I think you're looking at him as a projectable top nine, maybe even top six forward in the NHL. And then on top of that, he has, over the course of his career, played all three forward positions. He is playing center currently, but has played both left and right wing. And so there's just a lot of versatility to his game that should allow him to make the jump here shortly. And he's going to play NHL games this year in Buffalo. I would be shocked if he doesn't. And then I expect that this time next year, when they're exiting training camp, that he's a full-time 82-game player for the Sabres, even though they have pretty good depth up front as is. So he sort of sits, they've got some good prospects, Konstantin Helenius, Noah Ostlund. They've obviously, Zach Benson's established himself with the Sabres. They've got some very good young players on top of Jack Quinn and JJ Paterka, and you go down the list, but he has established himself as sort of next in line, if you will. Like he's going to get that call up before Isak Rosén does, before Noah Ostlund does, before Konstantin Helenius does. Like he's the if he's not on the opening night roster, he'll be call up number one or call up number two for them.
Yeah, that's a great point. That was going to be my question about Kulik, because I've always loved Kulik when I watch him internationally or in the AHL. He just looks like so much fun. Like you said, the versatility, like he can make it work in many ways. What I just worry about is, for fantasy, is he going to be that just really solid middle six forward that does whatever you need as a team and it's just really good contributions to the team? Or does, and maybe only score 40 or 50 points, which, you know, would be not as good in fantasy? Or does he really, and will the team see him as you said, that top power play, got to get that shot off, get fit, you know, 10 to 20 power play points and score, you know, 60 to 70. It sounds like he has that upside, but I wonder if the team will want to use him that way.
Yeah, that's the big question, especially with Tage Thompson and his one-timer there, obviously. It's not as easy as saying we're going to put Jiří on the flank and let him pound one timers, right? So that's going to be the deciding factor. I think he's an easy projection for 20 to 25 goals a year, 40 to 50 points a year in the prime of his career. Like, I think he's going to be that player. He'll absolutely be on a power play. Like, it's not a question of whether he'll be on the second unit. That's a foregone conclusion because of the one timer. But the difference between 45 and 50 points and 65 points, for example, or 60 to 65 points, for example, is PP1 versus PP2, and whether he's really getting funneled those one timers and really the priority and the focal point of an NHL power play. And that's not as cut and dry with Jack Quinn there, with Dylan Cousins there, with Tage Thompson there, with Alex Tuck there. He's going to have to prove it. So I think the expectation should be that he starts his career on PP2, and that maybe by the time he's 25, 26, 27 years old, then he's sort of graduated from PP2 and he's a PP1 scorer, one-timer shooter type.
Awesome. Which other Sabres really stood out that you wanted to mention?
Well, there a lot of the talk has over the last couple of years has been around their forwards. Naturally, Zach Benson broke into the league early last year. Jack Quinn's a solid young player in the league. JJ Paterka was one of the best young players in the league last year. And then they've got Hellenius and all those other guys coming. But I think what has become interesting about their build here is that A, they've got their quartet, their sort of top four locked in on D as well in Owen Power, Rasmus Dahlin, Matias Samuelsson, and now Bowen Byram after the Casey Mittelstadt trade. But behind them, they've actually got good depth. Now, Adam Kleber's college-bound player, so he wasn't participating in this. Maxim Sturback, college player, so he wasn't participating in this. But the kids who were there, in particular the two Russians in Vsevolod Komarov and Nikita Novikov, they look like legit NHL prospects. And one of them's a lefty, one of them's a righty, so they've got both-handedness. Novikov was a very good player last year in the AHL, and I expect will be a very good player and a call-up option again for them in the AHL this year. Komarov is the reigning QMJHL Defenseman of the Year and QMJHL Playoff MVP. He went to back-to-back Memorial Cups and won back-to-back QMJHL titles with the Quebec Ramparts and the Drummondville Voltigeurs. And Komarov's a really nice story because he's a fifth-round pick that they've turned into likely a future NHL defenseman. So Komarov was, I thought, looked himself and looked good in the tournament, and he's a player that I'm really looking forward to watching in the AHL this year.
Awesome. That's great. Extra insight of all those guys. And yeah, the Sabres look really like they could be a great team for years to come. Thanks so much for doing this, Scott. I want to make sure people know about all your great work. I don't know how they could be listening to this podcast and not be following everything you do, but would you please tell them where they can read about all your great content?
Yeah, all of my work is at The Athletic, and you can find it via Twitter, or I guess X as it's called nowadays, and it's at Scott C. Wheeler on Twitter.
Awesome. Thanks so much for doing this and have a great scouting season.
Thanks, Victor.
We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get 200 instantly in bonus bets. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app with the code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get 200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code THPN. The crown is yours.
Thanks so much to Scott for providing us all that awesome insight on the prospects from the Buffalo Prospect Challenge. Thanks for listening to this report, Double Prospects Report number 75. For feedback on the show or to chat with us, follow us on Twitter at DPR underscore show is the main handle, at Farling, PHARLING for Peter, at Victor Nuno 12, VICTORNUNO12 for me, and Jim Ike HW, our producer Jimmy, for his great content as well. Don't forget to follow at HockeyPodNet for all the great content there. And subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or the podcast aggregator of your choice. If you really want to help the show, give us a 5-star review. It really helps everyone else see the show and helps give us good feedback. Thank you so much. Until next time, keep your stick on the ice.